From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Ben Brock Johnson, and this is On Point. The stage is set for the battle over President Donald Trump's second Supreme Court pick. Last night, he announced his nominee to fill Justice Kennedy's seat.
Tonight, it is my honor and privilege to announce that I will nominate Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court.
Kavanaugh was there during the Clinton investigation. He's been on the Federal Court of Appeals. Now he's about to face some contentious Senate hearings as Republicans rush to get him confirmed before the midterm elections. This hour on Point, who is Brett Kavanaugh? What does his nomination mean for the Supreme Court? You can join us on air or online. What's your verdict on the president's pick? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining us now from Washington is David Savage, Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. David, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Ben.
So let's talk about Kavanaugh's credentials here. He has many of them. He is more than any of the potential nominees President Trump has had on his shortlist. 12 years on the bench, an Ivy League law degree, a history of working in the federal government. Break it down for me.
Well, you're actually exactly right. I mean, if the question is this guy qualified and have all the credentials to be a Supreme Court nominee, it's definitely yes. You know, he's got a lot of experience in the federal government. He worked for George W. Bush in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a judge for 12 years. Smart guy, nice guy, known by a lot of people in Washington. So on credentials, very strong. Also a very conservative record. So that's what's going to be the fuel of the opposition.
This is something we can delve deeper into in a few, but just top line it for me, David, if you will. There was some talk that this experience, record of rulings and opinions, might create issues for Senate confirmation, right?
Well, sure. He was a key player in the investigation of Bill Clinton all through the 90s. It was a very aggressive investigation led by Ken Starr. Brett Kavanaugh was a sort of young lawyer, had been at the Supreme Court just a year. He was a young guy. And he was in charge of, for a while, the reinvestigation of the suicide of Vince Foster. And he took a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and he lost on the question of whether the independent counsel could force a lawyer who had spoken with Vince Foster a few days before he died, he could force him to turn over his notes. And the Supreme Court said no, attorney-client privilege survives even after the death of the client. So it was quite an aggressive investigation. And since we now have another independent investigation going on against the president, I'm sure that the Democrats will have a lot to ask about his views about investigating the president.
Yeah, I guess one of the interesting things that was striking me last night is just your description of him and your reporting as being so involved in an investigation into the affair of a president. And it did, at least the alleged sexual affair of a president at the time. And that sounds pretty familiar right now, I suppose, to some who want to pin down Donald Trump on some stories about this.
Yes, I think inquiring senators will want to know a little more about that, because you remember the sort of issue in the 1990s was, from the point of view of the Starr investigation, was the president has lied. He's repeatedly lied in different – he's lied to staffers. He's lied in various places about his relationship with Monica Lewinsky. And he tried to cover up the affair and the lies. Therefore, that's an impeachable offense. Well, you can – extrapolate to the Democrats sort of asking a version of that question. What about a president who's, you know, allegedly lied about different things and may have obstructed justice? So it would certainly make fodder for an interesting set of questions.
Sure. And speaking of Democrats asking questions and thinking about Judge Kavanaugh's record here, this is from a 2004 hearing on Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the D.C. Circuit. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin noted Kavanaugh's knack for being in the right place at the right time when it comes to Republican politics.
It seems that you are the Zella for Forrest Gump of Republican politics. You show up at every scene of the crime. You are somehow or another deeply involved, whether it's Elian Gonzalez or the Starr Report, you are there.
David, the Forrest Gump of politics. Talk to me about this characterization. Does that fit?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, it is true that he was involved as a young guy in a lot of Republican things. I'm not sure I would use that comparison or where that came from. Everybody knew he was Kavanaugh is a very smart guy. The allegation was he was a sort of partisan, hard-edged Republican. Mm. I will say he's had 12 years on the appeals court, and to some degree that, you know, wipes away or scrubs away some of that. You know, if you spent 12 years on the court, you can talk about your court record, not your early political record.
Sure. So give me some basics then on where he falls in his 300-some opinions when it comes to checking boxes here for the GOP. He appears to be anti-gun regulation, pro-religious freedom, and perhaps anti-abortion as well?
Yes, I think all those are correct. You know, to take gun rights, for example, that's an issue that is in flux at the Supreme Court. 10 years ago, they said you have a right to have a handgun at home for self-defense, and the court has said almost nothing on that issue since then.
Hmm.
About 5 years ago, Kavanaugh wrote a 52-page dissent in a case where the D.C. Circuit, two Republican appointees, upheld part of a D.C. ordinance that said you can't have a semi-automatic rifle and with a large magazine. Now, California, New York, I believe Massachusetts and a few other states have such laws. The Supreme Court has refused to hear challenges to ordinances in the Chicago area. I think the young people who are anxious for the government to do something about guns would like some sort of law that limits semi-automatic weapons and large capacity. Well, Brett Kavanaugh wrote a 52-page dissent basically saying the Second Amendment protects a right, an individual's right to have a semi-automatic gun that he said these guns are in common use, and therefore he cited a part of Justice Scalia's opinion on it. Therefore, it's unconstitutional to limit the possession of these weapons. So, you know, if he joins the Supreme Court, which is quite likely, there may be 4 or 5 votes to then take up the question and expand gun rights under the Second Amendment.
All right. Well, I want to go to your quite likely statement there soon and talk more about that. But also, he's been described as an originalist and a textualist, apparently. And forgive me, I think I know what originalist means, but can you break down those terms for me, David?
You're right to be a little confused about it, Ben, because originalism can be a slogan. It often is just a slogan, but the notion is, you know, that the court should decide based on the original meaning of the Constitution and its provisions. They shouldn't make up a new meaning. To me, all that always sounds good in principle, but it's sort of hard to apply. The 14th Amendment says no state may deny to any person the equal protection of the laws. Well, what does that mean? In 1868, it didn't mean equal rights for women. So would the court say today we can keep women off juries, we can keep women out of government jobs because originally the 14th Amendment didn't mean equal rights for women? So in principle, it sounds like, oh, sure, you should decide the Constitution based on what it meant. But it gets very controversial when you start to apply those terms. Textualism just means decide based on the words of the law, not the purpose of the law. There were great dispute from the 1970s, for example. Congress passed a law that says you cannot discriminate based on race. And in the 70s, some employers started to have affirmative action programs. The court upheld them on the grounds that the civil rights law was intended to integrate workforces, intended to bring in African Americans and minorities.
Sure.
There was another view that says, no, it says do not discriminate based on race. Follow the words, not the purpose. And that's been sort of a continuing dispute. Kavanaugh and many conservatives are on the side of saying follow the words, not the purpose. Define the law narrowly. And so that's sort of what textualism is.
Interesting. David, stick with us. I want to bring in some more voices now. Joining us now from Notre Dame, Indiana, is Richard Garnett. He's professor at Notre Dame Law School, the founding director of the Program on Church, State, and Society. He also clerked for the late Chief Justice William Rehnquist at the Supreme Court. Rick, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
And with us from Charlottesville, Virginia, is Risa Goluboff, Dean of the University of Virginia School of Law. She has clerked for Justice Stephen Breyer at the Supreme Court. Risa, great to have you here as well.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
So we only have a minute or two here before a break, but let me ask you, Risa, a quick reaction to the nomination of Judge Kavanaugh.
I think it's an entirely predictable nomination. He has, as David was saying, incredible credentials. He's obviously a very talented and smart person with a long history on the bench and excellent credentials, and a solid conservative, which is what President Trump had said he was going to do and then did.
All right, Rick, let me ask you then, because we've got a little bit more time. What do you got? Quick reaction.
Yeah, I agree entirely with Risa. It's interesting to note that with an administration that's, let's say, been not typical in many respects, the judge-picking operation seems to be running very typically. This is a nominee who we would have expected from a President Mitt Romney or President Mitch Daniels or any other more traditional Republican president.
All right. We're going to talk a lot more about Judge Kavanaugh and all of this. We are discussing President Trump's pick for the Supreme Court. You can join the conversation. What do you want your senator to ask Judge Kavanaugh in the hearing coming up? What issue is top of mind for you heading into the confirmation? I'm Ben Brock Johnson. This is On Point.
Planet Money tip number 17. A great analogy doesn't have to make sense.
Busier than a one-legged bobcat covering up his own crap on a frozen pond.
Didn't you just make that up?
Well, yeah. I just...
Planet Money, a poetic podcast about the economy.
This is On Point. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. We are taking stock of President Trump's announcement last night that he's nominating Brett Kavanaugh, a federal appeals court judge, for the Supreme Court of the United States. You can join the conversation. Would you confirm him? If so, why? If not, why not? My guests are David Savage, the Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, Richard Garnett, a professor at Notre Dame Law School, and Risa Goluboff, dean of the University of Virginia Law School. And I just want to actually start by playing some more tape. This is President Donald Trump citing Kavanaugh's elite credentials and legal reputation when he announced the pick last night.
He's a brilliant jurist with a clear and effective writing style, universally regarded as one of the finest and sharpest legal minds of our time.
Okay, so we've been talking about this a little bit, but Richard, what do you think? Do you agree with the president there?
Yeah, my impression of Judge Kavanaugh's both judicial opinions and the scholarly articles he's written is that it's certainly accurate to say he's a careful and excellent writer. I don't think there'll be any dispute about that. The debate about Judge Kavanaugh is not going to be about his intelligence or his ability or his dedication to the judicial craft. It's going to be about whether or not people agree with his judicial philosophy and his methodology.
What about you, Risa? Let me get your reaction to that as well. Do you think he's sort of going to – this is going to come down to his judicial philosophy when it comes to things like Roe v. Wade?
I think that's right. I agree with Rick entirely. The question is not, you know, does he have the qualifications? Is he the kind of person in terms of his background and expertise and talents who one would put on the bench? The question is, what is going to happen to the Supreme Court? What is going to happen to the interpretation of the Constitution? And I think that a lot of liberals and progressives are worried about that. And, you know, his record is as a conservative. President Trump chose him for being a conservative. And, and you are likely to see changes, I think, going forward. So I think that is exactly where the battle will be joined.
Speaking of the battle being joined, I'd like to talk to a caller now, if possible, and hear from them. John from Orland, Maine is calling. John, what's your comment?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. The
sure.
comment is more of a question to your panel. In light of the investigation that's going on with President Trump, do they think that it's justified for a Supreme Court nomination to go through while this investigation is ongoing? I mean, his replacement, President Trump's replacement, might end up being much more conservative, and therefore a more conservative justice might be selected. But the question is, there is a very serious investigation going on. Shouldn't things kind of slow down and stop until that's done?
And John, you're from Maine, obviously, so we're talking in part about Senator Susan Collins and whether or not she would vote for this in the short term. David, what do you think? Is this Mueller investigation going to be an issue for the confirmation?
Well, no, because John's question was, does he think they should go forward? Well, the they in this instance is Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans, and they are very inclined to move forward, and they've made quite clear that they will move forward. I think some Democrats, again, will say, gee, is this the right time to speed through a nomination? But Mitch McConnell is very good at this, and he's got 50 votes, and he's not going to be waylaid or stopped by the fact that the Mueller investigation is going on.
Mm. Let's come back to that. I do want to talk about Roe v. Wade. This is obviously one of the things that's top of mind for a lot of people. Richard, is there a case in recent past that Judge Kavanaugh ruled on that might give us an indication should that debate come up for him if he gets confirmed to the Supreme Court and how he might vote?
Yeah, he had a decision not long ago, actually, involving a case where an undocumented minor was seeking to have an abortion here in the United States. It didn't call into question, or didn't even really present directly, the issue of, you know, should we overturn or not Casey versus Planned Parenthood or Roe versus Wade. It was more of an immigration law case. But certainly, I think a lot of people are reading Judge Kavanaugh's opinion as expressing at least some reservations about interpreting the abortion right broadly. I think it's probably the case that were he to be confirmed, you'd see him joining justices in deferring to some state and local regulations of abortion.
Risa, what do you think about that?
I think that's right. I agree with Rick. I also think that the question of Roe versus Wade isn't a question of just overruling it, right? I mean, there are lots of restrictions that states impose on abortion, and it's possible for the court, which is what the court has been doing for, you know, the last several decades, to chip away at the actual rights on the ground of women's ability to get abortions without overruling it. So I don't think it's an either Roe stands or Roe goes. And either a Justice Kavanaugh will overrule it or not overrule it. I think there's a lot of gray in there, and I think he is likely to be conservative on abortion. I don't think, and you know, I know there's been some criticism of him from some social conservatives and folks who hoped that the president would choose someone who had, you know, more of a record on abortion. I don't think that's his key issue. I don't think that's where the bulk of his constitutional thought and jurisprudence lies. Or has lied in the past, but I do think that Rick is right that where we have evidence, it does indicate that he is more likely to find against there being a constitutional right to abortion.
Okay, speaking of that evidence, let's go back to 2006. This is a D.C. court, circuit court confirmation hearing. Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer asked Brett Kavanaugh whether he views Roe versus Wade as an abomination. Kavanaugh refused to give his personal opinion.
And I'm saying if I were confirmed to the D.C. circuit, Senator, I would follow it. It's been reaffirmed many times, including in Planned Parenthood versus...
I understand, but what is your opinion? You're not on the bench yet. You've talked about these issues in the past to other people, I'm sure.
The Supreme Court has held repeatedly, Senator, and I don't think it would be appropriate for me to give a personal view on
that case. Not going to answer the
question.
Okay, so no personal opinions there, at least in that exchange. Do we have any other indications of, how this particular issue might pop up in the future and how Judge Kavanaugh might look at it? I'll put that to Rick.
You're listening to the Schumer quote. It's kind of a deja vu thing because almost every nominee for the last 30 years has given an answer something like that.
Right, has had that question, right?
Right, and I think we should expect it again. I mean, it's just not going to be the case that a nominee is ever going to say, yes, I will overturn Roe, or no, I absolutely won't. It probably would be inappropriate for a nominee to say something like that. In terms of other indications, you know, one thing that I predict will happen is that you'll see a lot of litigation involving abortion regulations being redirected into the state court systems. We had an interesting decision out of Iowa a little while ago where the Iowa Supreme Court announced a rule protecting abortion rights that, as I read it, was even more protective than the Casey versus Planned Parenthood rule. And I suspect you'll see many challenges to abortion regulations in the states being, again, sort of steered into the state court system, partly in an effort to prevent the issue from getting to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Rick, let me ask you about the judge's religious views a little bit. I know that people have talked about dogma playing into you know, some of his opinions during his 12 years and 300 opinions on the court. Do you think that'll play a role here? As I understand it, I believe he's Catholic.
Brett is a Roman Catholic. The dogma term, in my view, and I've been on record as saying this, was a very unfortunate term that Senator Dianne Feinstein used when she was questioning now Judge Amy Barrett when she was up for confirmation to the Seventh Circuit. Senator Feinstein was pushing now Judge Barrett about her own religious views and about whether or not Judge Barrett would be able to follow the law. And Senator Feinstein concluded with what a lot of us thought was a kind of strange suggestion that, quote, the dogma lives loudly within you and that therefore she wouldn't be a conscientious judge. I'm hoping that we won't hear lines of questioning like that this time around with Judge Kavanaugh. He hasn't written a whole lot of opinions regarding church-state matters or religious freedom, a few, but not many. And my hope is that the senators, in a sense, maybe learned a bit of a lesson that the American people really don't want to have these confirmation hearings devolve into kind of religious tests and so on.
Okay, well, let's actually hear the comment that you were just referring to, Rick. This is Amy Coney Barrett's Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearing last year. Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein voiced her unease with the influence Barrett's religion has on her work.
When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern.
Risa, what do you think about that? Do you think it's of concern?
I agree with Rick. I don't think someone's religious views are appropriately part of necessarily the confirmation hearing. It actually reminds me of the questions that were put to Justice Sotomayor when she was a nominee as well about whether her own background would influence the way she judges. I mean, I think it's both irrelevant and a truism to say, of course, someone's background influences their worldview, which influences the way they come to any text, the Constitution, statutes, but I don't think that those are the questions one should be asking of a Supreme Court nominee. I think you have to accept that we are all shaped by our experiences and who we are, and that judges are going to come to the text with a theory of interpretation and approach to judging, and of course we should be asking about those approaches and their methods of interpretation, like you were talking with David about before, but I think that's separate from condemning someone for their personal life experiences.
Risa, I have a new mission, which is to discover what you and Rick don't agree on. So let me ask you about that, since you
keep
agreeing.
Risa doesn't cheer for my Duke Blue Devils, probably.
But beyond
don't
sports,
cheer for the Blue Devils.
Seriously though, you guys have, I think, been on the same page for my line of questioning so far here. But Risa, where do you think you guys disagree when it comes to Judge Kavanaugh?
I mean, I think. I think we probably disagree on the methods of interpretation we would each bring to the Constitution, but that's separate from Judge Kavanaugh. You know, one thing I would add here is that there have been majority Republican nominees to the court for about 50 years now, and the court has gotten more conservative over that time period. But you know, Rick mentioned Planned Parenthood versus Casey, a 1992 case, which a lot of observers thought was going to be the death knell of Roe and was going to overrule Roe. That's from 1992. And I think nominations have changed dramatically in the last 25 years. I think the institutions that produce judicial nominees have changed and grown far more politically sophisticated over that time. And so I do think that nominees today are easier to pin down in terms of their politics. But, you know, there have been for a long time calls for or fears that Roe would be overturned, and that hasn't necessarily come to pass. So I think we definitely want to keep the historical perspective alive, even as I think things have really changed, and that this might be the time when Roe does get overruled. But we have thought we were in that time before.
Rick, any quick reaction to that? Very quick.
Yeah, you know, Roe versus Wade is more than 40 years old, and it's not settled either in the legal academy or in the citizenry at large. It's a really noteworthy and important fact that we continue to disagree about this issue, and it's really not surprising then that that disagreement comes out in our judicial nomination fights as well.
Fair enough. I want to go to a caller now. This is Danielle from Woodward, Iowa. Danielle, thanks for coming on Point. What's your comment?
I have a question for your panelists. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
It's my opinion that this jurist was nominated as Trump's get-out-of-jail-free card.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also pro-choice and feminist, but I think this trumps all that, no pun intended. Looking at past decisions regarding the Clinton affair, and that a sitting president ought not to be held liable or indicted or suffer criminal or civil penalties while in office. I'd love to hear your reasoned judgment.
Fair enough. Danielle, thank you very much for your comment and your question. David, any reaction to that?
Well, ultimately, removing a president from office is a political matter. There has to be an impeachment in the House. And so I'm not sure that Brett Kavanaugh or the Supreme Court is going to have not the last word in this, and maybe not a crucial word in this. I mean, it could be the possibility that some case comes to the court on if Mueller wants to question President Trump and he refuses, but I really think the investigation of the president and whether some significant action is taken against him is ultimately a political thing in the House. It's not a question of somebody bringing a criminal indictment and the Supreme Court upholding it or not. So in the end, I don't think I lack imagination here, but I really don't think Brett Kavanaugh is going to have the final word on this at all.
Okay, Risa, any thoughts on that? Would you agree with David, or do you think there's a possibility that this issue could come up on this Supreme Court that might exist in the near future?
I mean, I think there are various ways that litigation could come before the court, and the court would have to make decisions. You know, the strongest statement that Judge Kavanaugh has made about this is that Congress should pass a law that prohibits criminal prosecution or civil lawsuits against a sitting president. That's different from saying that there's a constitutional prohibition in the Constitution itself from undertaking those activities. So, you know, does his past experience, I mean, his past experience points in a number of directions, right? He was part of a prosecutorial team that was investigating a president, and yet he also has said that he thinks that's a problem when presidents get investigated. And
fair.
He has, yeah, so.
Fair enough. We're going to say goodbye to Rick and Risa. Richard Garnett, Notre Dame Law School. Rick, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And Risa Golubov, Dean of the University of Virginia School of Law. Risa, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, guys. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. This is On Point.
Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Peter Sagal. Come try the only show that treats the news the way it deserves to be treated, roughly, with lots of tasteless comments. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. We're looking at Judge Brett Kavanaugh, President Trump's pick to be the next Supreme Court justice. Republicans and Democrats are gearing up for what is expected to be a fight to the finish. Is this a battle Democrats can win, should win? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest all this hour is David Savage, Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. And joining us now, also from Washington, is Kimberly Atkins, the Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Herald and an attorney, we should say. Kim, thanks for joining the show again.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So just a quick reaction from both of you here. I want to note something that's kind of popping off on Twitter right now. People are talking about this is from Jeff Bennett. Source familiar tells NBC that Justice Kennedy had been in negotiations with the Trump team for months over Kennedy's replacement. Once Kennedy received assurances that it would be Kavanaugh, his former law clerk, by the way, Kennedy felt comfortable retiring. Kimberly, what do you think about this?
Yeah, so there has been some rumors floating around for a little while about just how much involvement retiring Justice Kennedy had in the selection of his successor. There's also reporting today from Politico that that's similar, but it says that the timeline is a little different, that it was once Kennedy announced his retirement, went to the White House and spoke to the president. That's when Kennedy began talking a lot about Judge Kavanaugh, his former clerk. So not so much that it helped him make the decision to retire, but that he clearly had a favorite in this race. And it doesn't seem that could very well be the case. My reporting throughout this process was that Kavanaugh was always the front runner, in part because he was a Kennedy clerk. He and Kennedy clearly had a good relationship, but also because President Trump liked him, and one of the reasons that President Trump likes him so much could have been because of the word, the good word that Anthony Kennedy put in. So really only the president and the retiring justice know for sure. The fact that I think that Justice Kennedy, at the very least, is fond of Kavanaugh, and that weighed positively on his nomination.
So not necessarily any impropriety there, at least how these things usually go. David?
Yes, and I don't know the details of this either. It certainly would be reasonable, I suppose, and you wouldn't be surprised if Justice Kennedy said, you know, I really recommend Judge A and Judge B because they're former clerks from mine, they're excellent people, I know them, and I'd recommend them highly. That wouldn't surprise anyone, I don't think, and I think it's quite likely that Justice Kennedy said something like that. Now, the idea to say he was negotiating if his departure dependent, that sounds like a different matter. And sounds, I would find that a little surprising that if it could be characterized as Justice Kennedy said, I will retire only if you agree to appoint or nominate Brett Kavanaugh or Ray Kethledge, who was also a Kennedy clerk. So recommendation sounds reasonable. Negotiations sounds sort of out of line if something like that happened.
Interesting. Let's hear some sound now from Judge Kavanaugh himself. In his speech last night, Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh said, President Trump did more legwork than any president ever before to choose a nominee.
No president has ever consulted more widely or talked with more people from more backgrounds to seek input about a Supreme Court nomination.
So whether we're talking about Kennedy or Trump, I guess there was a pretty rigorous process, at least according to the nominee. I want to talk to a caller now. Kathleen is calling from Dayton, Ohio. Kathleen, thanks for talking to On Point. What's your comment or question?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. But we know that Dems do not have the votes. However, I want your panel or your couple of guests to discuss the strength of the argument that Senator Mitch McConnell went off on, that, you know, a vote like this, it shouldn't happen prior to an election. So talk about the strength and the validity of that argument if the Dems are to use it. And here's a basic question. Why executive, legislative, and judicial? Why are judges lifetime appointments?
A lot of questions in there. Kimberly, any response?
Yeah, I mean, look, the effort, the ultimately successful effort by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to keep the vacancy made after the death of the late Antonin Scalia open in case a Republican won the presidential election. There was no rule for that. It was a political maneuver that ultimately paid dividends because the seat was still open when President Trump took office. The only rules governing this nomination process are those created and actually written in the Senate rules that govern how many votes are needed to pass, et cetera, et cetera. So that was a political move. The Democrats are trying to make the same argument now, saying that, well, since this is an election year, the midterms are coming up, they should wait. They just don't have the political power to effectuate that rule, quote unquote rule. And that's pretty much all that there is to that. And any time we have an appointment to the Supreme Court, particularly when after something like that, after the nomination of Merrick Garland was blocked, there is a lot of talk about changing the rules and term limits. There's been a lot of chatter lately about instituting an 18-year rule that justices serve for 18 years in certain intervals so that every president gets to nominate a couple, depending on how long they're in office. That comes with its own problems. If you know a Supreme Court justice vacancy is coming up and you can plan ahead of time, that essentially becomes part of a political campaign. So it may serve to increase the amount of politics in the selection process rather than decrease it. There's a problem there. And if I can just say briefly about the comment that Judge Kavanaugh made about President Trump doing
this. Yes, of course.
Super wide selection process. Of course, that's nonsense. I mean, that made me chuckle. That probably made most people chuckle. That seemed to have been an effort by Judge Kavanaugh to ingratiate himself to the president. Maybe a thank you, knowing that the best way to make the president feel good is to flatter him, even if the flattery is not exactly truthful.
Your suggestion being that other people did it, that it had nothing to do with the president.
The Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation did it. Yes, they created the list.
Fair enough. I want to go to another caller. Joe is calling from Richmond, Virginia. Joe, thanks for being on point. What's your question or comment?
Thanks for taking my call, Ben. Fabulous discussion. I, on the heels of the last caller, I would just say that I do think that the Democrats do not have a chance to block or alter this nomination. I think they should, based off of, again, what Mitch McConnell did in 2016. I also feel that we're in sort of this meatballs moment with Bill Murray and his campers saying about the fight with the rich, entitled camp across the lake. It just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the Democrats do. On the other hand, it's like Animal House. Did we quit when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? No. So let's go. And I think that the Democrats should unite and oppose this nomination at every step, including not taking any courtesy meetings with the nominee at all. They should stonewall in the same way that the entire Republican Party, not just Mitch McConnell, but all the Republicans did at the behest of Mitch McConnell. I think that everyone should rally, including the Manchins, including the so-called vulnerable senators, because it doesn't matter whether it's only a 49-vote minority or a 30-vote minority.
Fair enough.
McConnell is running the Senate. So that's my comment. I'd love to hear your comments offline.
Joe, thank you very, very much for your comments. I love your 80s movie references there, so points for that. David, what do you think? Stonewalling, is this going to work for the Democrats as they gear up for this fight? Can they successfully point out Mitch McConnell and the GOP as being hypocrites here when it comes to the American people, so to speak, making a decision about the nominee?
Well, they will certainly try. They will do a lot of things to try to point out problems here. You know, the bottom line is they probably won't switch any votes and not prevail. But sure, this will be a rallying issue for Democrats and Democratic voters. I think from the Democrats' point of view, it would be nice if that the public and Democratic voters were riled up and somehow they took control of the Senate. Because in 2014, when the Republicans took control of the Senate, right away, Mitch McConnell shut down the process for confirming judges. The last 2 years, the Obama administration had the fewest judges confirmed since when Harry Truman was in office in his last 2 years. He basically shut it down. And then we all know what happened when Justice Scalia died. He said, no, we're not going to allow a hearing on an Obama appointee to fill that seat. So the Democrats may be able to use this hearing to say, look, you need to there's some real problems here. You need to elect Democrats and allow us to exercise a check on the Republicans and the Trump administration.
Sure. There has also been some reporting of some hand-wringing around Kavanaugh's nomination coming from conservatives as well, right? And while the most conservative legal organizations in the country, by some measure, seem as solidly in their camp, there are a few opinions in his past that suggest that Kavanaugh might not be conservative enough. Something about Obamacare being considered as a levied tax. Kimberly, can you speak to this at all?
Yes, and I think this is a good example of how you're going to see people from all sides, how Judge Kavanaugh's record gives people from all sides a little something to be concerned about or to hate. In this case, it was the case involving the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act, and Judge Kavanaugh could have had the opportunity to issue an opinion saying, hey, I don't think that this is constitutional, which is what the conservatives would have wanted. Instead, he took the approach that since the law had not been implemented at that point, it was a tax that had not yet been levied. It was not yet time for courts to even consider that question. It's a technical ruling, one that the Supreme Court considered, but they went on ahead and decided that they had the power to rule on that case. Anyway, but in part of his decision, he sort of signaled John Roberts in saying that caution courts against throwing out laws that had been duly passed by Congress and with the support of, with a big campaign in support of the American people and such. This is part of the reasoning that John Roberts gave in upholding the Affordable Care Act. And so that has set up some alarm bells among conservatives who may think he's not conservative enough. I mean, if you look overall at Judge Kavanaugh's credentials or at the credentials of anyone on this list from which the president is choosing, these are all conservative justices. I don't think you can make a really sound argument that they're not. I know Republicans are always afraid of appointing someone like a Justice David Souter or a Justice John Paul Stevens, who are Republican appointees who ultimately start siding with the more liberal-leaning justices on the court. I don't think you're going to see that with any of these choices. So I'm pretty sure ultimately he's going to get solid support from the Republicans in the Senate. I would reckon to guess that even Senators Collins and Murkowski will probably come around.
Interesting. David, to the point of conservatives maybe being concerned about certain issues when it comes to Judge Kavanaugh, do you feel the same way? What is your thought about this?
Well, yes, I agree with Kim's description of that case, but I also think this will fade away immediately. It may have faded away by today. That is, in the run-up to these nominations, a lot of times some conservative groups on the real far right find something to dislike about different nominees. But once the president, in this case, President Trump, chooses Brett Kavanaugh, conservatives will all unite behind him. He's a very strong conservative, and you won't hear any criticism from the right that, oh, no, we can't go along with Brett Kavanaugh. He's not conservative enough. I'm pretty confident all that talk was behind us.
David, simple question, thumbs up, thumbs down, is he going to be confirmed?
I would certainly think so. I'd be very surprised if not.
Kimberly?
I think you will, too. I think the confirmation hearings are going to be raucous, and the Democrats will try to throw everything they can at him. But ultimately, I think he will have the votes, yes.
I want to ask both of you, and we only have a couple minutes left here, but I want to ask both of you if you think that there is a case from Judge Kavanaugh's past that bears his legal soul. So, Kimberly, let me start with you.
Of course. I don't know. I don't know that you can ever really get a full picture of someone's jurisprudence from their cases, even though Judge Kavanaugh has been on the federal bench for a long time, more than a decade. It's the D.C. Circuit. There are a lot of kinds of cases that just don't get presented in front of the D.C. Circuit. So I think there's always going to be an open question about how he would rule on certain cases.
Okay.
So I think it's hard to say.
All right, taking a pass. All right, what about you, David?
I have the same answer. The D.C. Circuit does a lot of dense regulatory matters. You wouldn't want to be on the D.C. Circuit unless you've got a tolerance for boring, dense cases. So you could read a lot of his opinions. You'll see he's a very conservative guy. He comes out on the conservative side. But there's no case that's going to jump out at you and say, wow, now I really understand what Brett Kavanaugh is all about, because that's just not the way the D.C. Circuit works.
David, quickly, do you think there's any chance that the Democrats might be successful in getting this pushed off until after the midterm elections?
You know, I think it's possible, Ben, but very unlikely. And when I say possible, it seems to me something dramatic would have to happen, or some new revelation come forward where a lot of people say, oh, we need to look into this further. So unless something dramatic happens, no, I don't think it'll be pushed off.
Fair enough. David Savage is the Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. David, thanks a lot for riding along with us.
Thank you, Ben.
And Kimberly Atkins is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Herald. Kimberly, it was great talking with you. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. This is On Point.